Welcome to Top Advisor Marketing, where you will learn how to become a prolific online influencer, attract more ideal clients, and grow your practice. Brought to you by Top Advisor Podcasting, a done-for-you podcasting solution built just for trusted advisors. And now, your co-hosts of Top Advisor Marketing, Kirk Lowe and Matt Halloran.
Hello and welcome to another Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. Today we're doing episode number 33. This is part one of three. We're going to talk about death by referrals, but today specifically, we're going to be talking about what has changed in financial marketing and what has not changed. And I'm joined as always by Kirk Lowe. Kirk, how you doing today, man?
Excellent.
Good.
You got some big news coming up today. Big, some fun stuff to do.
I do. Yeah. Well, we have embraced our geek here. For those of you who know that I'm a huge fan of technology, that also goes into the geek section. So we're about to take a trip to a really awesome Comic-Con. So
that's really cool.
Yeah.
And
I like it.
Yeah, so we got to get this over with so you can head on, man.
Well, but we have some good stuff
Believe
to cover
me, we
today.
We do not look at like getting it over. We have so much fun doing this.
We do, but this is really powerful. So this three-segment podcast that we're going to be doing is really interesting on how Kirk has outlined this. Because things have fundamentally changed, and if you haven't changed with it, well, then one, you're behind, but two, we're going to give you opportunities to figure out how to make changes within your practice from a marketing perspective to really get up to speed. So, Kirk, why don't we just jump right in? What has changed with financial marketing?
I've got 6 things here. Mm-hmm. So we're going to go through 6 items. So the first one is how we communicate, and this applies obviously to more than financial marketing, but we'll do, we'll share this as far as it applies to financial marketing. The first one is that we communicate digitally. There's still a lot of advisors, and part of the reason is that the average age of a financial advisor, last I remember hearing, was 55, maybe even a little bit older. Mm-hmm. I hope that's coming down. I think it is based on who we work with and talk to all the time, but that they're used to, face-to-face communication. They're used to trust being already like established and assumed in a relationship, and that doesn't happen anymore. Kind of giving away number two, but how we communicate is a lot different. So we communicate digitally, and a lot of advisors aren't used to that. And even young advisors we're finding, what's the etiquette for communicating digitally? A lot of advisors don't understand that. Like if you have a podcast and you've got a paper and you've got some really smart expertise and that's all you share on Facebook, you are not going to win any friends.
Right.
You have to, we talked about this in our show with our social media services. We talk about, getting connected with the community. How are you connected with the community? Are you doing anything in the community? Do you care about your community? People care about that. So you got to share that kind of stuff. What are you doing personally? What are you interested in? What are your clients interested in? So when you're looking at those things, how you communicate digitally, there's etiquette you have to consider. And we also communicate through photos and videos, which are obviously digital as well. So are you posting photos of you enjoying your life, of your clients, things like that, enjoying their lives? I know that can be a compliance issue, but you got to figure that out. Are you doing videos to communicate, share ideas? Not everybody wants to read a white paper or a blog post. Mm-hmm. And if you think about what most advisors, and I'm going to just guess at a number here, I'm going to guess that 95% of all content that is communicated from an advisor to their audience is purchased content.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Right? Not a lot of personality. And everything is about reading based on how that. Now, those are all, typically professionally written. And so they're good in that regard. But they may not address who your client actually is. But if you control the content, you can control speaking directly to the audience that you want to work with. Right. And about things that you know they care most about instead of being a mass generalization. So, that's really important to consider, too, is how do you make it your own? So if you took a concept that was in one of those articles, instead of putting out that article, you say, you know what, I'm going to break this down in simpler terms. I'm going to do a whiteboard video. It's going to be about 2 to 3 minutes, and I'm going to put this out in my social network. I'm going to put it through my YouTube channel. in a lot of cases, advisors could use, and I never thought about this before till right now, advisors could take that purchase content, turn it into their own thing, and distribute it in a different way. That's some really neat opportunity. You're going to get way more traction digitally because you're getting people. You're connecting with them where they want to be connected with.
Well, and again, it's organic content. We've talked about this before, that it's so vital for you to create your own language. And from a Google Analytics standpoint and a search engine optimization, by republishing the stuff that somebody else wrote that 1,000 other advisors are publishing actually hurts you from an SEO perspective. And I want to jump in here because I say this a lot when I'm speaking around the country on social media and communications, but you have to communicate to your clients and prospects in the medium in which they want to be communicated to while they're there. So that's why what Kirk is saying with digital photo videos, you know, we're obviously going to talk a little bit about podcasting as a medium. If you're trying to get to people, you have to be present when they're there with information that's applicable to us or to them. I'm us because I'm a financial services client too. So, Kirk, let's go ahead and finish up with how we communicate. And let's talk about trust, because it's really, really vital for everybody who's listening today to realize that trust is different now, and the way that you build trust is different. It's no longer this, you know, always so belly to belly.
Yeah, so I'll end off with my final point on how we communicate, and this will blend perfectly, lead perfectly into trust. And that's how we communicate in sound bites. So, and that's because Twitter has forced us all to think like that. And I think it's when Twitter first came out and said a character limit, which they're supposed to have changed, but they haven't yet. It was like, wow, this is so limiting. How are we going to make this work? And man, has everybody made it work?
Yep.
And it's real interesting. And the funny thing is I see times if you just can't make it happen in one tweet, people do like three in a row to get a bigger point across. And that's actually a really interesting tactic. Mm-hmm. But because we speak in sound bites, it means it takes longer to build trust. Because people are getting snippets here and there, it's going to take longer. The truth is you can't just interrupt their world, say, let's go meet for a coffee. Because this doesn't happen as early, and it's not as easy to make it happen.
Right.
The relationships you're building are typically digital. That's what people are looking for. It's how they process business decisions in their life.
Well, let's look at dating. Right. Hold on. Dating is a perfect example. I mean, before you do what most advisors do, which is let's meet for coffee, come in for a free consultation, you know, all of that sort of stuff, you know, here you get a second opinion. You have to date literally online before they're going to make, that face to face, because that's how people are building trust nowadays. And I think dating is a magnificent analogy when it comes to this, because nobody walks up to anybody at a bar anymore. At least I don't think so. I've been out of the dating game for a while, but I know people who aren't, and it all starts online.
By the way, I have friends who met between 15 and 20 years ago, I'd say probably closer to 20, who met through internet dating.
Wow.
And have been incredibly in love ever since. Wow. Anyway, cool stories how things have changed and how that can impact people. Mm-hmm. Not all bad. Not all bad. So trust is huge. So, you know, the idea of let's meet for a coffee is different than it used to be. You know, it's really, really changed. And this is going to really hit home for a lot of advisors. Is when you put that button on your website that says join us for a free no obligation financial consultation, that is a massive ask these days.
Oh yeah, totally.
And it has really, if it ought to be like the third or fourth choice as far as engaging you on your website. And I talk about this for so many years now. Mm-hmm. You know, when I started off doing financial marketing, hey, I thought that was the ticket too. This is our call to action. You know, here's our website, here's what we do. Very brochure-like, calls for consultation.
Right.
And to be honest, as the years went on, that was less and less of an engagement opportunity. So, you know, people are busier these days. It takes a lot longer to make impressions because they're small sound bites. So you got to be dedicated to it. And we're working with advisors doing social marketing, and some of them get the mindset and some of them don't. And it's a real struggle if you don't understand that you have to say the right things. You got to have some diverse content. It's got to be all about them. It can't just be about your expertise. It's got to be about being a good person. living a life that other people can relate to. That's what people want. Mm-hmm. And more people want to work with people they like. And everybody thinks it's just about price, but it's not, because there's a ton of advisors out there. I still get them. They're charging, you know, 1.5-2%. And it's like, you know, well, we deserve this because of how much stuff we do and how well we do for our clients. You know, there's advisors out there struggling to ask for 1%, right, of AUM. So
my old boss used to say that price objections only come into play when they don't see the value of what you're offering. Now, with that, though, when you're building trust and you're starting to start dating the people online, one of the best ways that you have down here to increase the ability for trust to happen more quickly happens to be being a pro. So would you mind jumping into what professional means to you and how that looks in a digital environment?
I mean, if you're going to be a professional, you have to be consistent. You have to be saying all the right things. And everything has to be of a level of quality that makes sense. I know that when you're doing stuff socially, there's this, you need to be an implementer. Mm-hmm. So you need to get stuff done. But there's really simple tools to make sure the stuff that you get done actually looks good and meets a certain standard. So that's part of being a pro. Having your own ideas is part of being a pro. If you're always curating other people's stuff, who's the pro?
Right, not you.
Right? So, you know, there's ideas like that. So that kind of stuff, you still need to be a professional. And so that's the third point. There's another angle of being a pro, so we'll call this 3B, which is that this is a big spin off and much different, but that's the fact that being a professional these days takes a lot more work. Mm-hmm. So, you know, your professional licenses, all the product knowledge, the technology. So running a practice and being certified financial planner, I mean, that's becoming, you know, more and more every day, that's become just table stakes, right?
Right.
Which is, you know, you need to have a CFP just to be out there.
Yeah, in the game.
In the game, thank you.
Well, I'm going to jump on that a little bit more. Even if you do have, I've got an advisor I work with in Syracuse who actually is taking advantage of our podcasting service, and he has a whole bunch of alphabet soup after his name. And one of the things that we talk about on his podcast is that alphabet soup, because people really don't know what a retirement income planner is, or a certified retirement income specialist, or, you know, any of those sorts of things. Take time.
Certified divorce financial analyst.
Yeah. CDFA, CAP, you know, chartered advisor in philanthropy. Look at those designations and take time in your own words and explain to people through this dating process why you got them and why they're important. People have no idea what that alphabet soup is after your name, but it's such a powerful communication piece and a great way to build trust to say, I got this for my clients because I found that they needed it. Let's talk about what the designation was. Let's talk about the fact that, you know, most of you are getting them through the American College, which is a very well-known university, and why it's applicable to you. And we're going to talk about that as we dive in deeper to these the three parts of this podcast on some communication pieces. But Kirk, you already talked about, you know, that running a practice is a little bit more difficult. So that's a part of changing financial marketing. Their profit margins are generally lower because now we've got a larger compliance overhead. I just met with a client today talking about Department of Labor. I can't believe the excess of paperwork that's going to happen because of the DOL here in the States. It's going to not only reduce profit margins, but it's also going to put advisors in a very weird position with some of their existing clients. But I want to talk about the evolving business model, because as you work on how to brand your company and how to market your company, the company structure is also changing. So let's go ahead and talk about that.
You know, I've working with a lot of independent advisors and multi-advisor offices and CAPAs. I mean, we throughout my career and yours as well, I've worked with a lot of different business models. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that scares me the most, because I see a lot of advisors that I've worked with aspire to this idea where they built a multi-advisor practice because they can there's economies of scale and there's efficiencies there. But I'm seeing some big problems and some things that I'm really scared about for advisors. And that is that when you when you bring in other advisors, they steal your time. And you have to be really careful. And the other thing is you both, if both advisors don't buy into a brand, mm-hmm. the brand that, that the original advisor set, I see a lot of problems there. So that seems to be changing that because you can really fall in a trap there. And so that's one of the business models that I'm really worried about for the advisors that we're working with. And what I do like, though, is the advisor who creates a brand and the idea is I'm going to be an independent advisor. I'm going to have this brand. They don't make the brand all about themselves, so they leave it open. I call that brand flexibility. Mm-hmm. So it means that somebody else can, if they buy into your brand, they can join it. It's not all about you. So, and then other advisors in the community that may be in competitors or friends or colleagues, whatever, look at that and say, you know what? That is exactly who I am. I love that brand. I never thought I would leave having my own independence, but or being my, brand being about me, but I want to join your firm. I want to shout your message too. I'll run my practice. You run your practice. I can see that working only in that kind of scenario. But the scenario where advisors are just bringing in other advisors, and they don't have the same inclination to that brand or that mm-hmm. story, or they run things differently, or they do different services, and they want to, those are bound to fail. And I've been coaching, not as a service, but just as a friendly thing that I do from time to time. I've met some people at some conferences and, given them some of my time to mm-hmm. get them out of some bad spots and open up communication with the people who have a brand that doesn't appeal to them and help make them make decisions, either figure out how this brand can help you or get out of there, because you can't grow a business if the story that the company is selling isn't you. Very, very difficult. And I see that happen way too often. Advisors feel trapped and then they sit there. What they do is they try to avoid the elephant and try to figure out ways around it. And all those ways are not how you grow a really long-term profitable business.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just go do something on the side and hope it's going to make a difference. Everything, we've talked about this so many times on the podcast, starts with having a foundation. And that foundation of who you are is your brand.
Right.
It's your website. Everything leads to and from that. Every campaign tactic you want to do. So that's huge. I've been talking too long, so you got to add something.
So one of the nice things about the different kinds of practices that we work with is you can create a sub brand. And so even if you are a captive, right? So I've worked with some people who are wirehouse-ish sort of advisors, and I've helped them create a sub brand. Now, the sub brand does not conflict with the overall brand, so you don't get in trouble, but it's basically just how you position yourself within the marketplace. How are you communicating your specialty? How are you communicating what makes your version of this overarching brand umbrella totally unique and different?
Just to help people understand that, a sub-brand works really well if the overarching message you get, but you have a niche audience you want to go after.
Absolutely. Well said. Very well said.
Yeah, it doesn't work if you've got two niche expertise, because that's off. So an example, what would be an example? Because we created a brand for some guys in California. It's called Better Wealth.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea of Better Wealth is overarching enough that if you wanted to offer Better Wealth to federal employees, you could do that. If you want to offer Better Wealth to business owners,
yep,
another guy could do that. So that is a perfect case of how that would work. But there's other cases where it's very specific. So if that overarching brand didn't apply to the sub brand, then that wouldn't work.
So Blue Wealth is another one of that we've worked with specifically. And Blue Wealth is for blue collar business owners. Now, he could create a sub brand there, even though that might sound very specific. He could also create a sub brand or sub advisors even who specifically work with people who own plumbing, HVAC, right? Things like that. So I think it goes without saying that the independent model, one of the biggest problems that I keep seeing when it comes to how you need to position yourself within the marketplace is you have to come up with something that's outside just your name. And when we talk about branding a lot, we definitely talk about that using your name isn't necessarily always the greatest idea. But I see that a lot with independent financial advisors. But just for the sake of time, We've talked a lot about what has changed with financial marketing, and I'm afraid that we're going to have our audience freaking out that there's all of these changes, but most people like consistency, Kirk. So let's go ahead and switch gears here and talk about what hasn't changed.
I mean, this list is a little bit shorter. You know, I think the ambitions of being a business owner and advisors wanting to be that, you know, independent, be wealthy, you know, have more fun, more time for their life and all that, I don't think that's changed at all. I mean, that's the American dream, and I think advisors are here for the right reasons. I think it's just a lot harder to achieve that, and there's a lot of things to work through. So it's not as easy. There's certainly still a lot of income potential. It's different because it's less profitable, but it doesn't need to be less profitable. You just got to find a business model, an audience, a focus, so you can get so dialed in that you can find the perfect people to work for you. You can systematize stuff. When clients are more similar, you can create more value, create more efficiencies. That's how you have to think of your business.
Right.
Don't think of it like how everybody else has run financial practices. Think of it as a different type of business and model it after a different type of business. Maybe think a little outside of a service industry and figure out a model. You know, what's a good example here? How does a particular product, you know, build and market? I mean, the more focused you are, the more systematized, the more cost effective you are at producing your product, the more you're known for an area of expertise with your product, the better your product will be. You can own a market when you do that. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to own a market when you're everything to everyone. So, the income potential is definitely there, but you got to, how you pursue that, I think, is definitely different.
I want to talk about a product really quick, because when we talk about product, and I think I'm just going to dive just one hair deeper on that. Every successful business outside of financial services has a defined product. Most advisors try to be so willy-nilly with what they offer that they don't have a solidified offering. So you have to be able to say, when you're marketing and building trust within this new marketplace, really what your deliverable is. So many of you just need to name that process. You need to try to tweak it just a little bit to make it so that people can identify with that a little bit more. It's like almost like wearing Nike or another company like that. People look at that as a specific brand and a specific product. You need to do the same thing.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, another thing that hasn't changed in this business at all, Matt, is helping investors. Mm-hmm. You know, every advisor that I work with and you work with, and we've talked about this before, is they genuinely want to do good things for their clients. And investors need advisors as much or more than ever. I mean, it's not like there's less products, less tax, circumstances, less pressure, less time, less information. I mean, there's so many things that contribute to investors needing advisors more than they've ever needed them. And I think that's a pretty fair statement.
Well, I do too. And that's one of the reasons why, by diving into and starting to communicate more effectively in this new marketplace, is so important. You know, you hear the statistic all the time that 10,000 people are able to retire every day. Well, if you look at how many advisors are out there and how many people don't have financial services professionals or don't get it the way that you think they should get it, the marketplace, there's no competition. There's so much to go around. But if they don't know you're there, then you're not going to be able to get in front of them. Now, Kirk, the idea of this episode and the episodes to come is really talking about death by referrals, because we're going to dive into what that means a little bit more. But that is something that has not changed. We still need referrals. So can you uncover or unlock what you're thinking about that, please?
Yeah. So this three-part series is based on a white paper called Death by Referrals that's on our topadvisormarketing.com website. And the idea was, let's communicate this verbally instead of just making it available on a paper for those people who would like to listen and have time to do that. Referrals are, it hasn't changed in the business that you need referrals. And I like to think of referrals as the lifeblood. there's some recent studies, and we talked about it a couple podcasts ago, about how more advisors are getting business from their social networks through online lead generation and things like that. To be honest, I the way I define referrals is really two ways. One is a direct referral and one is an indirect referral. A direct referral is the obvious traditional referral. Somebody made an introduction, referred me directly to, you know, from somebody to me. The indirect referral to me is you have a network and somebody in that network says something nice about you online as an example. And then that person tells somebody else they heard, you know, about you, or they saw your social post, or they saw your video, or they listened to your podcast because somebody else they know knows you. To me, anything that happens, any opportunity that is derived from your network is some form of referral. And advisors, I think, have this idea that there's all these opportunities out there that they want to go poach out of the sky with no relationship or with them whatsoever. And I like to think of those opportunities as being within your network already. Maybe they're second or third or fourth level. And when you think about LinkedIn, they have a great way of making you think about the possibilities of that one more connection, right? And Gary Vaynerchuk talks about this. He said, you know, that one person you add can have such an impact on how many different people you get exposed to. And I've really been struggled and challenged with how little value advisors place mm-hmm. on taking their existing life network, their face-to-face, the people they know, the community networks, and not converting them to digital. Because yeah. digital works while you sleep.
Well, I think I know the reason psychologically why. I'm dealing with this with a couple of clients that I'm consulting and coaching right now. It's because of how they came into the industry, Kirk, and that was sell insurance to your friends and family. And so this is one of the reasons why I think a lot of advisors don't look to their immediate social network, because they feel bad about having to exploit that to feed their families early on in their careers. But it's so powerful. And you and I are living proof, man. You know, let's talk about Doug, right? So we have a relationship with a company and a website called iris.xyz. And through our podcasting service, we're one of the exclusive podcasting services that he's using to put news on his news site. Our average advisors were hovering, you know, under 100 using their own social networks. But just being introduced by one other person, you know, these guys are getting 400, 500, 600 downloads per day on a podcast. And so you and I have brought guests on, Kirk. I mean, that's another great example. Guests on our podcast, and all of a sudden our listens go from, you know, we're hovering 200, 300 to 600, depending on what it is, thousands of people listening to our podcast just by that one connection. Do not think that somebody who you know, who you're playing soccer with, or your kids are playing soccer with, or that you throw darts with, or have beers with, or play golf with, couldn't be the next person to open up a whole bunch of doors. And from a coaching perspective here, Matt's going to get all coachy on everybody. You got to do the work, people. And that hasn't changed. The only thing that's changed is the medium in which you're doing the hard work. You're still going to go out and you're still going to press the flesh. Guess what? You still need to make phone calls, but you have to put in the same amount of hard work that you put in before when you were doing, you know, 10,000 dials to get 100 appointments to get one close. You have to do the same thing in this new medium. And if you are not willing to do that, your level of success is going to be exponentially low. You have to build your network online. You have to build your network face to face. You have to do the hard work. We can't do that for you from a marketing perspective. Well, that's not true. We could do it for you, but we make it so cost prohibitive because we want you to do that. You have to be touching it. You have to be feeling it. You have to be involved in it, because if you're not, it's going to be distant. You're not going to be connected to it. You're not going to close as much business.
Yeah, I think that's the most profound thing that hasn't changed with financial mm-hmm. in the financial industry and in marketing specifically, is that it takes a lot of work. We're working with some people on doing social media, and there's the expectations for some of them are good, and others are, you know, hey, you know, how come I'm not getting more views? Or, you know, I'm not sure I'm meeting the right people. And the truth is that all that stuff it's incremental. There's a Vaynerchuk article, and he's a big social guru guy in New York, I think, where he talks about, he says he can't believe how many people call him up and say, how do I get on in the New York Times? How mm-hmm. did you do that? And he's like, you know, they act like, you know, either my expectations are that I'm going to get there in a couple months or that how will I ever get there? And the truth is it's the same path that you and I are on, is we're not in the New York Times yet, but we're on our way. Mm-hmm. Right. So not that that's a goal of mine or I'm not sure about you, but you have to like do the hard work. You have to get in the trenches. You have to invite people. How many advisors spend some time every week going on LinkedIn, inviting people?
Right.
How many advisors, when they got a down 10 minutes, like when I do it, is when I'm at one of my kids' sporting events. I'm in an arena. I got nothing else to do. Kids are getting dressed. I sit there on LinkedIn sometimes, not all the time, and I invite 50 people.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? It used to be one of them said yes. Now 20 to 30 of the 50 invites say yes.
Well, and that's because of our visibility, right? And you know, I want to go back to the New York Times article because I hear that all the time. Matt, you know, my biggest goal is to be on CNBC. Well, let me tell you. Now I'm going to get life coaching on everybody. It's really the journey, right? So many of you used to love the hard work. So many of you used to love the game of increasing your network and all of that stuff. That game hasn't changed. It's just the format has changed a little bit. One of my big goals, Kirk, was to be in the Wall Street Journal. From a coaching perspective, right? From a practice management perspective, and it's happened two or three times now. And it's not to diminish the fact that, you know, the Wall Street Journal is still the be all and end all as far as I'm concerned. It's just, you know, it's the now what. And now what is, how else can I build my network? What is the next major step, right? You always have to be looking for that next greater thing. And so many of you have gotten very complacent, not just with your marketing, but with your practices specifically. This is the time to reinvigorate yourself. If you want to sell your practice, if you want to hand your practice off, if you just want to grow really big before you're done, using what we're talking about in these next three podcasts is huge. Now, I want to talk about one other quick thing. I've got an advisor up in Syracuse, New York, that I've been working with for a really long time. And he's like 55 years old, and he wants to work for another, we figured out, 7 years. And the amount of work this guy is putting in right now, he has increased his AUM. He's not a big practice. On average, from anywhere from $12 to $20 million in the last two or three years that we've been working together, he's pulling out all stops, hiring people, seminars, educational events, client events, because he really wants to turn it up before he kind of exits the business. You guys can shift into another gear, and I highly recommend that you look at these podcasts as the way to motivate you to shift into this next gear. Okay, Kirk, you got two more things that you want to talk about real quick, and then we're going to wrap up today and talk about what they're going to hear next in part two and part three.
Yeah, my wife did something really neat for my oldest son. He's 14, and when his birth, I don't remember when it was, but anyway, always for his graduation present, she bought him a Fitbit. And he's the kind of kid that gets motivated by numbers or goals. And mm-hmm. I didn't realize how significant it was, but he's walking like crazy with this Fitbit. Mm. He's comparing with his mother and I all the time. And he's part of the Fitbit, the community where he's having competitions. But what's interesting is he's way more cognitive of sitting down and how he's not getting steps. Mm-hmm. He's not doing stuff. He takes his his youngest brother and sister to the park all the time because he's getting steps, walking to the park and hanging out with them. He mowed the lawn. I told him, I said, look, he said, buddy, I said, if you mow the lawn, you're not going to believe what mowing the lawn.
Yeah, how many steps you get?
700 steps. He's like, there's 7,000.
7,000, yeah.
He's like, 7,000. He's like, so I'm like, you know, I can get him to mow the lawn quicker. I mean, he's playing Pokemon Go.
Yeah.
He's 14, but still loves you know, walking around and because, you know, for all the Pokemon kids who grew up on that, who now have this whole new world, I think it's such an incredible technological advancement or opportunity anyway. But I was thinking, if we could get a friend bit for advisors where they could start calculating how many friends they have and they're pushed every day to say, and you and I kind of have this going on.
Right? Oh, totally. Well, I'm way more competitive about this than you are, but that's
yeah, all right. Yeah, but I'm glad I'm making you more competitive. And the fact that you're starting to get more competitive means I want to drive it so I can
absolutely, man,
go any more. So, you know, we have a good amount of connections on LinkedIn, and it's a lot easier the more work you do, you've done, because we have a podcast, blog, we have all these good things in our social channels. It's a lot easier to get a yes.
Mm-hmm.
That didn't happen for me. Even 3 years ago when I, like I said, when I would do 50, I would get, you know, one or two.
Mm-hmm.
Now when I do 50 invites, I'm not kidding you, I get 20 to 30 people to say
yep.
yes.
Yep.
And so, you know, I try not to burden LinkedIn because you can get in trouble for doing this, so don't get in trouble. Start slowly, invite 20, you know, stay out of trouble. But the more hard work you're doing to create authentic content and do all those things, you're going to get better. Anyway, the point was, is a friend bit. If we could invent a friend bit, would you guys start inviting more people? Because it's absolutely critical to you growing your audience and finding those outlier opportunities that are waiting for you, who are ready to do business with you. They just have no idea you exist.
Mm-hmm.
So we got somebody's got to invent a friend bit.
Well,
you know what? It already is invented. It's called number of connections in LinkedIn.
Right.
It's called number of friends in Facebook.
Absolutely. You're really diving into something that I've been doing a lot of research on recently, which is called gamification, which is why your son is so interested in leveling up and competing with other people, especially if you're going to start targeting millennials, or if you are a millennial and you know that you have this gamification, this game kind of drive within you. Let's create some games out of marketing. Let's create some games out of how to increase your network. Set yourself some goals, and it can be an enormous amount of fun and very, very invigorating. So,
could we do that for advisors? Could we create a contest?
Oh, well, I've already. Yeah, let's roll that out maybe in the next one. I've already got all of that stuff built. Just because I'm a huge gamer, and I do Pokemon Go, and you know, I got 14-year-old boys too, and we do all that stuff together. But enough about my nerdiness. Let's talk about the next two podcasts. So today was episode number 32, Death by Referrals, part 1 of 3. The next podcast is part 2, is going to be Demise of Referrals and Why People Refer. And then episode.
It may not be our next podcast because we've got so many.
That's a good point.
It'll be in the near future.
Yeah, well, we're going to try to package these together, though, so everybody can listen to them one to one. But so that's number 2, Demise of Referrals and Why People Refer. Number 3 is How to Create Momentum and Inspire Ideal Referrals. So real quick, Kirk, within just a minute or two, you got any closing ideas?
I think that the hard work is the thing that rings true with me. Everything we talked about today is just figure out how to do the little things that make a big difference down the road. Just think about that, and I call it momentum marketing. This is just momentum activity. If you focus on doing activities, that'll be worth a lot more down the road versus, you know, sunk activities.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you know, we've talked about this before. I think that's huge. Focus on things, activities that are going to build momentum in your practice. In other words, when you build one on 2 to 3 to 4 to 5, they're going to be still worth that and down the turn, and they'll be worth even more. Mm-hmm. Focus on that kind of stuff.
Awesome. Well, with that, thank you guys very, very much for listening to our Top Advisor Marketing Podcast. This was episode number 32, and we'll see you on the other side of the mic really soon.